My name is Carlton Smith, and I want to welcome you to this meeting here in Ketchikan. With us, we have several staff from the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, and I am a trustee, one of seven trustees. We had a meeting this afternoon in Saxman, which was lively, and we're expecting this to be a great meeting tonight. Before we get started on an agenda, a presentation, I wanted to first encourage folks to please take some of this food home with you. We had quite a bit of food in Saxon, so feel free to get up during the presentation and take some of this food with you. What we're going to do is we're going to see a short video about the trust. We'll give you a flavor of what we do, who our beneficiaries are. We have 50,000 Alaskans that we provide benefits for, and this is a story of one of our beneficiaries. And then following this presentation, which will be brief, I'd like to ask Wynn, who's here with us, to spend just a few minutes and talk about the history of the trust, which predates statehood. And it would help you have some context in understanding, again, the history of the trust, how this land came into our ownership. We are private landowners. And that, I think, will help make the rest of the presentation a lot more understandable. So we're going to, do we have somebody that can dim the lights? This is only about 4 minutes.
Dog handler with dog daycare. I enjoy working with dogs because something about them really calms me. A miracle when a dog starts to learn and change. And when they mess up, but they try so hard to be a good dog, it's hard not to fall in love with every dog. I want my own dog really bad, but I've only been out of prison for a little over 3 months, I think, now. It's important for me to reestablish myself in society outside of the institutional environment. I mean, some parts of life is like riding a bike, but other parts it's like learning every day. You have to learn how to interact with people who aren't institutionalized. Well, growing up, I always just kind of felt a little different. Just something wasn't right. Like, no matter how much I would breathe, sometimes I just felt like I wasn't getting enough air. Early in my life, I started to really act out. So what they told me was that I had a behavior problem. And as a child, what I heard was, you're a bad person. Nobody told me what I had was a panic disorder. That's when I learned how to self-medicate. That eventually turned into a heroin habit. Everything kind of has built up, you know, the problems in my life have compounded, and, you know, if I'm sober, I have to face it. It eventually led me to prison. When I got sentenced to 15 years, I felt like my life was done. But the mental health clinician, you know, started offering me real help. Let me figure out what it was that was wrong with me. I'm not bad. I have a disorder. She helped me learn how to cope with it. People take chances on me today, you know. They trust me with that, and the counselor that I work with, I can stay clean. I don't ever have to use again. I don't ever have to go back to prison. Being able to manage my panic disorder, I'm proud of it. I feel good about myself today. There are so many people out there struggling right now. These are people's parents, they're people's children. These issues reach everyone. They touch everyone. No one's protected from it. Anybody's child can become an addict. Anybody's child can have a mental health problem. If it can impact your life, why wouldn't you want to help be a part of the solution?
Now I'd like to introduce to you Wynn Menifee. He is the Deputy Director of the Trust Land Office. He's going to share with you a little history of the Mental Health Trust in the state that, again, precedes statehood.
Thanks. Good evening, everybody. So just so we have context here, In 1956, before statehood, the territory of Alaska was granted 1 million acres through the Mental Health Enabling Act. And this Mental Health Enabling Act was set up to allow the state to improve its mental health services. And those right in the law that was enacted. And the purpose of providing this land was to provide income to make a comprehensive mental health program for Alaska. And so what the state did the territory started down a path of selecting lands. And lands were selected throughout the state. There were surveyed lands back then, and they could only select surveyed lands, so it sort of dictated where the selections would be. And oftentimes they were near communities because that's where the surveys were done. And but nonetheless, there was this 1 million acres that was selected. And the state, when it became a state, wrapped in all those trust lands into general management state lands. Because the purpose of the Mental Health Enabling Act was to raise revenue and maximize revenues from that land, there was mismanagement on the state's side of managing those specific trust lands. They oftentimes gave it away at below fair market value, they gave it away for free, they did various different things like that. There was a class action lawsuit in 1982 brought forward by Weiss, and the class action lawsuit said you've mismanaged the trust lands and we want you to reconstitute it. Well, in 1984, the Supreme Court did an order that said you have to restore those trust lands specifically. And it took until 1994 to finally do a settlement that essentially reconstituted the trust. And what that was made up of is there's 500,000 acres of original trust lands. But because a whole bunch of that original trust land had already been sold or gotten rid of in some form or fashion or encumbered, the state had to find 500,000 additional acres as replacement land. So we have 1 million acres then that was put together, plus a $200 million cash settlement. And that's what constitutes the corpus of the trust. That's what created the trust. And that's what we manage when we talk about the Alaska Mental Health Trust. It's from those original trust lands, the replacement lands, and the cash that we got to that settlement. And that's what we are managing today in some form or fashion. So that's the brief history.
Thank you, Wynn. What we'd like to do now is recognize some of the local leadership here tonight. I have not met any of you, but I just want to make sure you know that we recognize you're here. Dan Horst, State Representative. Dan, thank you for being here. Dan Bockhorst, Ketchikan Gateway Borough City Manager. Carl Amelon, Ketchikan City Manager. Carl, thank you. Owen Graham, Alaska Forest Association. Thank you. And David Landis, Ketchikan Borough Mayor. Where are you? Thank you all for being here. It's important that you're here. What I'd like to do now is, as you've already heard from Wynn, but I'd like to bring him back up to the podium and have him tell you what he really does. And then he'll be followed by the other members of the Trust Land Office who are here tonight. Thanks, Wynn.
Hi, again, I'm Wynn Menefee. I'm the Deputy Director of the Trust Land Office. This is the revenue generation side, which we'll talk a little bit more. The Executive Director, John Morrison, couldn't make it, unfortunately caught the flu and was not in any condition to travel. So unfortunately he couldn't make it today. We manage land, like I said, all over the state, and we have a good team here, so I'm just going to let the others introduce. I actually only started working for the trust in January. You might have heard the name before because my wife used to be the executive director of the trust land office for several years. So anyway, runs in the family, I guess. So with that, I'll turn it over to Paul to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Paul Slinkamp. I'm the Senior Resource Manager for the Trust Land Office. I take care of their timber and forestry issues statewide. The Trust has about 260,000 acres statewide, many of those that are can be considered commercial timberlands. Our primary timber revenue has come from our southeastern area. I've been in the industry in various aspects since 1978. I live in Ketchikan, so thank you. David Griffin.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming out tonight. This is a good turnout. My name is David Griffin. I'm the Southeast Area Lands Manager, and what that means is I work on our land sale program, easements, leases, due permits, stewardship, handle trespass issues. Basically anything that's associated with the land. And we've got about right around 2,000 different parcels spread throughout Southeast Alaska in pretty much every community. And so I've got a wide variety of different projects going on, Wrangell, Petersburg, here in Ketchikan. So thanks for coming out. And if you have any questions about our land sale program or have anything you'd want to share with me about some questions you may have about trust land in general, feel free to give me a call or stop by. I'm just around back there at the sign-in sheet table. So, thank you.
What's your name again?
David Griffin.
Good evening. I'm Carly Lawrence. I'm the Chief Communications Officer for the Mental Health Trust Authority. That's the programmatic side of the organization. I oversee all of the communication materials, a lot of the advocacy work on behalf of our beneficiaries. And one thing that I'm very passionate about is I'm charged with decreasing the stigma surrounding our beneficiaries in our state and producing the video that you saw earlier today. So.
Thank you, Carla. What I'd like to do now, just to introduce myself, my name is Carlson Smith. I'm originally from Haynes, Alaska, and at one time I did live here in Ketchikan, down at the Towers. I spent a fair amount of time when I was a young man on Prince of Wales Island. My family has lived continuously in Juneau for over 100 years, and I wanted to share with you that as a relatively new trustee, there are seven of us. Governor Walker appointed me about a year and a half ago. The process is a very interesting one in that you write a letter to the trust, you tell the other trustees your qualifications, and my qualifications is real estate and resource management. You outline your qualifications, and then you tell the legislature in your confirmation hearings why you're passionate about the trust and the mission of the trust. And for me, my mother was a trust beneficiary for over 20 years. She was homeless for a great period of time, quite a bit of that time in Juneau. And had it not been for the trust authority and the benefits that the trust provided her, her life would have been much, much more difficult. And what she died at an early age, about 54 years of age in Juneau. And this is what makes me passionate about the mission of the trust. Two points that I want you to hear from my perspective tonight are as follows. We get it. We understand how important Deer Mountain is to you. We understand your feelings about Deer Mountain. And we also, and this is coming from me, apologize. apologize to you for not having this consultation earlier in this process. You should know that, and we know, you should know that we know now that we should have been here earlier and had this consultation earlier in this process. So those are two things that I want to share with you tonight, coming from me as one of seven trustees. The other trustees on the board come from a very wide and varied professional backgrounds. Some are trained in a private sector, as I am. Others have program backgrounds. It's an impressive group of people. If you would care to look at the profiles of the other trustees, including myself, on the website, that material is there. I encourage you to go to the website. So what we'd like to do now is identify the meeting goals, and they are three tonight here. We want to share in more detail from what you just heard. We want to share in more detail how the trust works and how we serve the beneficiaries. Update you on this land exchange that we're working very hard on. It's a greater priority, believe us, than to be cutting any logs. We want this land exchange to work. And the status, the current status. And most important, we want to listen to you, engage you, so that we have your full commentary from this meeting and future meetings about how you feel about this issue. And maybe there's some other solutions here. So, where would we like to go with this? Lynn? Harley, I'm sorry. This will be about the trustees and what we do for them.
Thanks, Carlton. So I just wanted to share a little bit about what the organization does and who we serve. So the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority is the only organization of its kind with a mission to improve the lives of our beneficiaries. Our beneficiaries are Alaskans. We only operate for Alaskans. But they are Alaskans who have an intellectual or developmental disability, a mental illness, a chronic alcoholism or another substance abuse disorder, Alzheimer's disease, or related dementia. So that is a very broad group of Alaskans. We are a state corporation, but we act as a private foundation, and we grant, on average, about $20 million throughout the state annually. And so we do that at kind of a three-part, we do it at a system level where we advocate with the legislature and the administration to ensure that services are available and that laws are enacted in the best interest of our beneficiaries. And then we do that at a community level, and we grant to individual organizations that serve our beneficiaries. And then we do that at an individual level, where we give out individual beneficiaries grants, we call them mini grants, up to $2,500 each. And we do this on a monthly basis to help in their lives, whether it's for, it could be for a young kid who has autism, it could be for an iPad to help with their sensory learning, or it could be for a new bed for someone with Alzheimer's and dementia, so that way they can stay in their room. So it's a very wide range, and that's done on a monthly basis. So those are the three types of grants that we give out. And then we have our funding priorities. Those are set by our trustees, and currently they are disability justice. We know that our beneficiaries are overrepresented in prison populations, and so we're working really hard with the legislature, the administration on reentry to make sure that our beneficiaries have employment opportunities, housing opportunities, and addiction services for them when they are released from prison. We also have substance abuse prevention and treatment focus area, to ensure that Alaskans have access to treatment in as close to their community as possible. We have a housing and long-term services focus area, making sure that there's affordable housing for our beneficiaries. And then employment and engagement, making sure our beneficiaries have employment opportunities, just as every other Alaskan does as well. So those are a couple, some of our very broad focus areas. We also have another priority that our trustees have set, and that is Medicaid redesign and reform. And just last year, our trustees have dedicated $10 million to help reform the Medicaid system to allow for better care for our beneficiaries and for Alaskans, and also paid the administrative cost to for Medicaid expansion, allowing more Alaskans to have access to that care. So I just wanted to share a little bit about what we do on the programmatic side and why it's so important, what you'll hear more about, what you're mostly all here for, I'm sure, to learn more about the land exchange and the potential timber harvest, but what those programs do allow us to do the work that we're doing on a daily basis. So I'll hand it over to Lynn. Thank you.
Thanks, Carla. So, what I'd like to do is just talk just a moment about the Trust Land Office and its purpose, you know, the mission to protect and enhance the value of Alaska Mental Health Trust lands. We are tasked, we're essentially a contractor to the trust. We're basically, we're in the Department of Natural Resources, but we manage the lands, the non-cash assets. We are managing it to produce revenue. And some revenue comes from the cash that is invested in the permanent fund, along with the permanent fund. But then we get income and principal off of different things that we do with the land and resources. And the whole purpose, as Carly said, is to support the mental health services for the vulnerable Alaskans. We have to responsibly manage those lands, and we treat them like private lands. They actually, there's a state law that says that they are not state lands. They're very similar to a native corporation in the sense that we are managing them for the trust and for the beneficiaries. We have a fiduciary duty to earn the revenues. That means we have to keep that forefront in our mind in all the decisions we make. We're supposed to better that the trust, we call it the corpus, the whole package. And our decisions are managed. When we make a decision, we make it solely in the interest of the trust. That's by statute and regulation. And so it's a very specific, it's very unique. I've worked, before I came to the trust, I worked for Mining Land and Water for 12 and a half years as the chief of operations for Mining Land and Water, and we did things in the best interest of the public. Here we do things in the best interest of the trust. It is wholly different. So what types of things do we do? For instance, we have a diverse portfolio. We do land sales. We do land authorizations, things like leases, easements, and licenses to let people use the land. We do material sales, timber sales, real estate transactions. We manage buildings like downtown Juneau, the KTOO, TV there. They're in one of our buildings. And we have buildings throughout. And so we have a lot of real estate investments. So with all that, we try to keep a diverse portfolio so that if one market starts to sag, we can bolster with another market. So that's the type of management we do. And I'll go to the next slide, which talks about the principles. When we make decisions, these are the principles that guide our decision. This is actually in statute, in regulation. But what we're supposed to do is we're supposed to maximize the long-term revenue and productivity for trust land. And we don't look at it just instantaneous. We don't look at just one moment in time, but we have to look at it in longevity. And we're supposed to protect the corpus. Don't let it devalue. And that means we have to look at, you know, everything from interest rates to other factors that might devalue something, and we have to react to that. We are supposed to diversify our revenue production. And then we're supposed to manage the trust lands prudently, efficiently, and with accountability to the trust and the beneficiaries. Well, the efficiency, we don't do things quite like general state land. We don't have quite the same process. We have special regulations that tell us our process, so it's a little different. But anyway, these are the principles that that guide how we make decisions for the trust. So with that, besides picking up this paper and putting it elsewhere that keeps falling off, we're going to move into a status update, and if you want to do that, or you want me to do that?
Which piece?
The status update. Do you want me to go through that?
Right.
Yeah, okay. All right, great. So I'll just move on to the status update here a little bit. Just real briefly, we're going to go into more detail about the land exchange and about the process, but just real quickly, we have essentially two things, two tracks that are going on. One is we're working the exchange, and secondly, as a backup, we're working the proposed timber sale, and we'll go into the difference. But the land exchange legislation is our first priority. It is what we desire to do. We are working that diligently. We believe it still can pass in this legislative session. We have precedence that shows that other land exchanges have been passed in this type of environment. We have worked long and hard to make sure that the package that we're working with has been vetted through numerous meetings a long time ago, Futures Roundtable and other things. But we've been working for 10 years on this land exchange. And then it went into it, and Paul will go through all this. But we still believe, with Senator Murkowski's support, who's a strong advocate of this bill, that it's going to go through. Secondarily, we have this proposed land exchange. And that is being discussed at the November 17th board meeting. It's a reconsideration of an action that was taken in August. But it's a different track. If the legislation fails, there's a different track to go down, and part of that is this November 17th reconsideration of their concurrence to move forward with timber sales. Those timber sales have not been decided to go forward, and we haven't even designed them, but Paul will go into that. We want to apologize that we didn't inform folks more when we announced the proposed land sales, more about why we're doing it, but we really believe we needed to do that to protect the corpus, and we'll go into that a little bit more, but I do understand that the way that we rolled it out amplified the concerns of people about Deer Mountain and other places, but that's why we're here trying to explain what the different processes are. So, land exchange process, still moving, still can pass, we really believe it will, and then the the timber sale is a backup in the event that that doesn't happen. So, that basically is where we're at status-wise, and there is a board decision that is going to be heard, or a board action that needs to take place, and they're reconsidering their decision to concur with the timber sale moving forward after January 15th, if and only if the land exchange fails. So, with that, I would like Paul to come up, tell you a little bit more about the land exchange and also a bit about the timber sales. And then, just to say, is you're going to be having questions that probably come up as we're doing this. Just make sure you remember what those are. When we get through all the presentations, we're going to do questions and answers, and hopefully if we missed something, then we can fill it in there.
Oh boy. Okay, I'm Paul, and as I said, I'm the forester for the Mental Health Trust. I've also been working on this land exchange for my entire tenure with the Mental Health Trust, which is since about 2008, started my ninth year. This whole issue started basically 2005 in Petersburg, where the proposed timber sale, there was concern by the residents there. We started reevaluating our options, and land exchange was proposed at that time. Through the years, trying to institute a federal land exchange, which is a discretionary action by the Forest Service, is an extremely difficult process, long and time consuming. So we went through various scopes, trying to do legislation, trying to identify lands, both trust and federal, through that process. And then in 2010, we began this land exchange process in earnest with Horace Cole, the then Forest Supervisor. He encouraged a 62-step process, which NEPA is not two steps of. So it's an extremely complex procedure. In 2011, we started the subcommittee, early 2011, late 2010, with the Thomas Futures Roundtable. We formed a subcommittee of that organization to study the exchange and to suggest potential real estate. If you look through here, we have these maps that are shown. This is all the federal, or all the mental health trust land. We have Deer Mountain, which is just a small segment of it. There's about 17,700 and some odd acres in this particular exchange. There's also land in Petersburg, land in Wrangell, land in Sitka, a small chunk in Myers Chuck, and then also on Douglas Island outside of Juneau. The Futures Roundtable, we had various organizations represented. Nature Conservancy was primary, Wilderness Society, SEAC, Trout Unlimited, Wilderness Society. Anyway, there is represented by the environmental groups. We had communities, we had individuals, and various agencies represented there. There was very little discussion about taking trust lands and putting them into public ownership, and barely a consensus that these lands surrounding these communities should be public lands where there is a public process that happens prior to development. As I stated earlier, trust lands are not state lands, so they are managed for other than general public interest. So after a lot of deliberation, these areas here, Hollis, area near Nocatee, and an area near George Inlet was identified as suitable federal lands that could be put into trust ownership. These lands are already under timber development LUDs. They are about 60%, 50 to 60% harvested already, so there's an extensive road system, and according to the environmental community, have been previously impacted and therefore would be suitable for ownership by an organization such as the Alaska Mental Health Trust. In 2012, the Thomas Futures Roundtable actually passed a motion. They had 35 seats, and everything that passed had to be by consensus, and they came to consensus on no issues other than the Alaska Mental Health Trust. This September 4th, 2012 booklet I've passed out a little under 500 of them over the last 4 years, and that is the basis that this land exchange is founded on. There has been some subtle differences in some of the parcels, but primarily it is very, very, very similar to the exchange that was endorsed by the Thomas Futures Roundtable. Also during this time, there's been considerable impact on the timber industry, the Forest Service changing their policy with the Young Growth Policy in 2013, with the Vilsack announcement. Timber, they announced earlier this year that they would not have an active timber sale program for any large timber sales, that they had no volume that was NEPA cleared and was not litigated. At that time also, Viking Lumber, Sea Alaska, and Alcan Forest Products, which are the three largest components in Southeastern, announced that if there wasn't a viable timber that source identified quickly, that they would probably be shutting their doors. So anyway, Alaska Forest Association and the industry got together with Senator Murkowski, and in May of 2016, she introduced Senate Bill S-3006, which is the Alaska Mental Health Trust Land Exchange Act of 2016. Since that time, we've been working with the Forest Service, our consultants, and various Senate staffers trying to identify mapping issues, land issues and stuff that would, so we could come to an agreement also legislative language, on this legislation that is pending. We did have a hearing last month. It was a part of S-3203, which is a large Alaska bill, but it did have a hearing. We've been working on fine-tuning this legislation, and with the, both the Forest Service and the staff, and we feel that we're very close to having a bill that is can be enacted. And that is where we're sitting now. As you know, the government may realize, you know, the Senate is all out campaigning. They will be back in session starting November 14th for a week. We will work with them very closely at that time, trying to structure this and place it in an area that can move forward. And hopefully in the December, late, be to December, that this bill could stand a very good chance of passing. And so that is, as Wynn Carlson said, that is by far our preferred alternative. We believe it will not only allow the trust to move forward, providing revenue for beneficiaries. As we all know, we're in the middle of a very bad financial crisis, and that is certainly affecting our mental health services along with every other state service. So one of the things we get to do with the trust is try to, you know, balance our fiscal responsibility with the reality. You know, we have these assets. Our organization is mandated to maximize revenue from these assets. That's what our fiduciary responsibility is. As far as the Deer Mountain timber sale goes, I have not started putting together a timber sale operations plan. We have not designed it. We have not advertised it. We have not sold it. We have actually not even putting together a best interest decision yet. We really need to stress this. Under our process, we go to the trustees and tell them we have a potential project. We knew that this potential project was going to be extremely controversial, as we can see by all the people that are here in this room. So they paid extraordinary attention to it. They even announced it. Typically, we do not announce a timber sale until we've gone through, told our trustees we're going to do an action. Then I write a best interest decision. When we actually put the best interest decision together, which means that we have decided to move forward with this action, we then enter into a 30-day comment period, public comment period. And at that point in time is where we take comments from public on this activity. We have not gotten there yet. We have not put out the best interest decision yet. So once we put this best interest decision out and we receive comment, then we look at how you know, these comments affect our sale, whether they have merit, whether we should restructure this action, which should be a timber sale. And then once we take all that under consideration, then we put out what they call a best interest decision affirmed, which if the public has commented on the best interest decision, they can then appeal that decision to move forward. That happens for 20 days, and then we would affirm the best interest decision and move forward with the project. But I do want to stress several things. One of these is that it is our sincere hope and prayers that we do not have to move forward with the timber sale. And the other is that we have not put out a best interest decision yet to action, which allows for public comment. And so,
thanks.
So just let me clarify that we intend to put out timber for sale, but we prefer to do it with those orange areas after the land exchange happens, because that would be a much more accepted area because there's already timber activities going on out there. It's more remote. It would be better to be doing that. So one of the things that we want to just make sure you really understand, maybe I'm repeating, but I just want to make sure you understand, is the timber sale that we propose for Deer Mountain and Petersburg only occurs in the event that the land exchange fails. We're not even starting down the decision process or anything like that until we find out if the land exchange goes through as lame duck session. Secondarily, there is still a reconsideration up at the board trustees meeting this November 17th. And as I understand it, at least tentatively right now, there's going to be a public comment period on the 16th. 4 o'clock is tentatively what we've said, but there'll be a notice coming out on that. And so the board of trustees will hear public comment, then the board meeting occurs on the 17th. And if you can't make those meetings, but it's teleconference, but if you can't make those meetings, we have orange comment sheets that you can fill out right now, and we'll take it to the board. Another is, you have board comments there, you can email them. And they just ask, their general rule is to try to get those, I think it was 2 or 4 days before, I can't remember, something like that, before the meeting, because they need to incorporate it into a package to give to the trustees. So what we try to do is show you the two processes for going down, and hopefully that's clear, but if it's not, it'll come out in questions and answers. And then what we're going to do is we're going to move into questions and answers. And one of the things that I just want to encourage you is that we're going to call on a person, we're going to answer their question, we'll then move to the next person, and we're going to try to spread the questions around so we get everybody represented that wants to speak. And so we're not going to stay with one person, we're just going to take a question and move on. And the idea is we want everybody to be able to ask their questions. The intention is we'll go through this question and answer period, and then if there's some time at the end, we also want to informally, if you have, if you want to go deeper with something, some subject, any one of us that has been introduced to you, we're happy to talk to you further about something in more detail. But with that, I'm going to head into question and answers.
Thank you, Matt. I'm going to give this portable mic to Carly, who's going to bring it around. And I just wanted to add to those comments that Wynn just made in terms of the Q&A. What we want to be able to do, and remind me if I don't do it or Wynn doesn't do it, we'd like to repeat the question so you'll be able to hear. You'll be able to hear the question that's being asked. We're okay with follow-up questions. We don't want to limit them necessarily, but we want to be able to get around the room here. If you don't wish to ask a question here in this meeting, perhaps you can write out the question. There's some paper in the back there, and we'll address the questions then. And we can supply further contact information to you. So we'll start with Bob.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, I've been snapping for coming to Ketchikan to talk to us at Mountain Mass about an action that I think most people in the community think will be very detrimental to the community on a long-term basis, into the mental health of the community on a long-term basis. I have a couple of comments and I have a question. Mr. Smith made an apology for not engaging us earlier, and I want to say very clearly, I'm sure you're well-intended, but talk is cheap, and actions speak louder than words, and I'll tell you what I mean very specifically. The Resource Management Committee of the Trust, which is comprised of the same people who are on the board, same people, same seven people, at a meeting that most objective observers believe was illegal in violation of the Open Meetings Act on August 11th, where they, without any public notice, without any mention that the timber sales were going to be discussed by a body that, because statutes were referred to earlier that you follow for the fiduciary responsibility, there's other statutes that you have to follow too. One is 4462.310, the Open Meetings Act. 2 days later, with scant public notice, the board concurred with the recommendation that they made to themselves. There was obviously, which you knew in advance, great public controversy, not only in Ketchikan, but in Petersburg. And some of the controversy had to do with the secrecy that the agency uses and has used routinely. There was talk, the term reconsideration was just used. The board is going to, quote, reconsider the action. The implication of that is they might change what they did. They might, you know, open up the issue. Well, in fact, the Resource Management Committee a couple days ago reconsidered their recommendation to the board. It was exactly what they voted on at the illegal meeting on August 11th, and they are asking themselves to concur with the same recommendation. Most reasonable people would not consider that to be, quote, reconsideration, and I think use of the term is misleading, and deliberately so, and I'm going to say that here. So my question is this. There are four communities that might have positive benefit from the exchange in terms of four urban communities and hopefully some of the rural communities by logging activity if the exchange legislation goes through. Ketchikan, Petersburg, Sitka, and Juneau. My question is this. If it was truly the intent of the staff, the board, committee of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority to get support for the land exchange legislation, why did you go to all four communities? There's 2,000 acres in Juneau that hasn't been discussed with the community. There's acreage in Sitka that hasn't been discussed. Instead, you picked on the two small communities in southern southeast and put a gun to our head. So my question is, why didn't you take a more positive approach, have meetings in all four communities saying, the push is on, we want to get this legislation done, we need your help. We need help of the 30,000+ people in Juneau who will benefit from it, people in Sitka. Instead, it was the process that you used, mainly behind closed doors. Why didn't you take an approach with all four communities and not threaten our mountain here?
The facts are, we have met with Juneau, we have met with the mayor in Juneau, we have met with the city manager, and there have been other assembly members involved. I served previously on the Juneau Assembly, so that is not accurate. We did not consult with Juneau. As far as Sitka goes, Min, do you have a comment there?
I consult with Sitka administrative process.
So there's different entities, like Paul just said, he consulted with Sitka. So did we have meetings at their assemblies? Maybe not. But we talked with the leaders. And you may have mentioned, just I thought I'd point out, said we're going to benefit four communities, but we're actually going to benefit more than four communities. Because any of the revenues that come in from these two sales, if we went to the sales, or if we go to legislation and then future sales sell off of the lands that we would get, the benefits are going to go back to multiple communities because of the mental health programs that service those communities all over the state. And it's not a one-for-one relationship that we sell this much in Ketchikan and then only Ketchikan benefits. The money goes to the trust, the trustees make a determination where that money is spent. I do understand what Bob's saying about we could have done things differently. We didn't, and I understand that. We've heard it loud and clear. But It is a reconsideration that the board's doing. They can make what decisions they make, and it's a decision they can make. They can rescind the decision, they can modify the decision, and they can still concur. In that decision process that they're doing, the Resource Management Committee, if I remember the motion that was read at the end of the Resource Management Committee, was recommending that the board reconsiders the decision. I don't think it actually said concur in the Resource Management Committee. It just said, we believe that you should reconsider it at the November 17th or soon thereafter. So there wasn't, in this meeting, a recommendation of concurrence, if I remember correctly. Okay, so anyway, just for clarification, so another question. Sir?
First of all, thank you very much for being here tonight and giving us the opportunity to provide input into the process. And I certainly have come to understand and appreciate the role that Mental Health Trust plays in the state of Alaska and for the benefit of those people who need mental health services. I appreciate the work that you folks do. Understanding fully the fiduciary responsibility that you have and that you have to act in the best interests of the folks you serve, with that understood and appreciated, do you also consider the overall impact, economic impact, if you will, on the local communities that you would be operating in or next to? For example, here in Ketchikan, if you were to take the least preferred alternative, and I appreciate that you want most of all the exchange to take place, but if you were to do that, would you consider, before making that decision, the potential economic impact on other industries, in this case, for example, the tourism industry?
Thank you, Representative. The question being is, well, you've heard it. I don't think I have to repeat it because the mic's pretty good. I think the answer is that when we go through a best interest decision for the trust, we have to make that decision that what's in the financial interest of the trust. And I'm speaking for the trust land office, our best interest administrative process that we have to do for a best interest decision versus the board making a decision. And when we do that, we have to consider the present value, we have to consider the long-term value to the trust, but we don't make a decision that's in the best interest of the public. Now, there's a difference because the Forest Service, the state, Mine, Land, and Water, they make decisions that are best interest of the public, and they consider more about the economics of the tourist industry and things like that. That actually is not in our regulations to consider. Now, if in fact we see some other, I'll call it ancillary impact to our action that is going to hurt the trust financially, we absolutely will consider it. But it is different because our mandate is to solely make the decision for the benefit of the trust. So yes, it is different.
Okay, so another question.
I'm Renee Schofield, and in full disclosure, I serve on the advisory board on alcoholism and drug abuse, and I am the appointed representative on the mini-grant program. So I see firsthand how much money the trust brings to the state of Alaska, the vulnerable Alaskans, and I appreciate that tremendously because that program, we just had a meeting last week, and it was about $65,000 that we funded to different Alaskans who need support. So this program is critical and vital to support our people. But to follow up on that, two things. One, when we talk about the impact, whether it's economical, one of the things you're charged with is taking care of the beneficiaries, yes? Number one thing, the mental health of the beneficiaries in Southeast Alaska will be greatly impacted by cutting Deer Mountain. We need to think about that. That needs to be first and foremost. It doesn't always have to be about money. It has to be about the people. So we have to go there first. To follow on Bob's points, I'm curious, because of the way this is all shaking out, do you think you'll change your process? Do you think you'll do it differently? Do you think, what do you think about that with the letter from Bruce Botello recently and Harry Nora requesting a potential legislative audit that went to Mike Walker? I'm curious, what do you think about that? Do you think you'll change the process so that you're out in the public talking to the community? I appreciate you talk to leaders in Juneau and Sitka, but the public is who you really need to talk to.
The question, as I understand it, is do you think that the process will change in terms of how we consult with the public and make decisions? And as a relatively new trustee, it's certainly my view that this is a start, this meeting here at Saxton. And we're by no means perfect. But the kind of consultation that you're talking about, as Wynn has suggested, is different for the trust. We are not the state agency in many respects. We believe that the legislature, in its wisdom initially of crafting this thing as a little different animal, they knew, and we know, that it really has to function a little differently so that we can generate the revenue, we can make decisions with proper consultation more quickly so that we can benefit the people that we're there to serve. And having said that, I think we can do a lot as an organization to put into place some standard public relations efforts that aren't always issue-based, so that you know who the trust is, you know what our mission is, you understand how the people served in the Ketchikan community, as you've shared with us, you know how they are impacted by the trust. So yes, that consultation process, I'm going to take that back to the other trustees from this meeting, from the Saxman meeting, and I would like to see a new, more engaging program with the Alaskan public. Thank you for that. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Jake Gale. So first of all, I'd like to continue on what she said, that you just completely avoided. Your mission is to benefit the people of Alaska and our mental health. Cutting down the trees on Deer Mountain does not benefit our mental health. There are many studies that show that outdoor activities, and Deer Mountain is one of our easiest, are good for our mental health. So you need to consider that as part of your mission. When that is your mission, to benefit our mental health, that is part of our mental health. Our fear of flooding, because I have lived at the bottom of a mountain that flooded and took out a house from logging. My fear of living at the bottom of Deer Mountain is not good for my mental health. But my main questions are, one, I cannot believe you did not consider, if you're going through a public process, trying for a land exchange, the power behind the people. You've known since 94 you had this land, if I understood right. You've been working on it for 10 years. In 10 years, we could have written a number of letters to the Forest Service in support of a land exchange, couldn't we? I mean, I assume you guys are intelligent, probably more than me. Guarantee that. But why didn't you think of this? Why didn't you enlist our help in making your job easier to do this land exchange? Why didn't you come forward and say, let's do a land exchange? No, you came forward and said, let's log. And if you have limited lands, at some point you will run out of land. It seems to me that a better option would be starting to look at alternative uses for the land. And I am not anti-logging. And if logging will help POW and a land exchange works for that, more power to it. But what about looking at some of the land like Deer Mountain land and seeing why it couldn't be used for long-term revenue, ongoing revenue, sustainable revenue, that can be used in other ways, say for tourism? There are a number of companies that, want to do land-based tours. You could be earning money every year from that. Is it huge? I don't know, but it's ongoing. Have you considered anything like that? All I hear is timber, 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 timber. At some point, you're going to run out of timber. You're going to just keep trading. So that's my thought.
As I understand your question, yours really is a historical question. Why is this taking you so long to not come up with an alternative? Is that one question? And I wanted to restate what Paul said earlier. We don't have a plan to cut this timber. We do not have a plan. So I wondered, Paul, could you share some of the history here? When you first came to the trust, this question goes back 10 years.
Well, there's quite a bit said there, but actually, the Mental Health Trust exists to benefit the trust beneficiaries, the identified beneficiaries that Carly identified. So the general mental health trust of the population is not necessarily, although, you know, I understand, but the trust was formulated to specifically provide benefits to a group of people that were sent to Morningside Institute in Oregon during territorial days. And that is where the trust beneficiaries, the identification of those groups come from. I was reminded of Mr. Weinstein when he was talking there. I was in this room when 115 people testified against the annexation of Shoreline. You'd be one of those residents. And a state agency said, hey, doesn't matter. City wants to take it, we'll take it. So, anyway, so sometimes just for the benefit of, you know, the programs and the institutes that are established, we have to make these decisions. So, and it's not like our trustees or even the staff of the trust likes to do that. But as far as the design for the timber sale, we're here because, you're all here because of the timber sale and the mention of it. I have been going community to community for over 5-6 years selling the administrative land exchange. I have presented at the Southeast Conference twice. I've gone annually every year. I've addressed the Sitka City Council. I've talked to the city managers. We've talked, you know, we've made resolutions to Ketchikan Gateway Purple. We've, you know, Juneau, we have not done a lot up there, although we have talked with members of the council and the mayor, and it's not exactly an overly contentious issue in that area. So this has been out there. We've been trying and soliciting comments and support for this administrative exchange for years. Unfortunately, sometimes it takes an action such as this to get people's attention. And, you know, for that, and that's why we're apologizing, because we don't want to bring everybody out here in a negative light, but if we just had, you know, a session to come and talk about something that might happen, I don't think we'd have the turnout that we have.
There's a lady in the back.
One point of clarification I would like to make, Paul, and Paul doesn't work on the programmatic side, so he's not privy to all that we do, but prevention of beneficiaries is something that we consider part of our mandate. So not just existing beneficiaries, but it is also the prevention to become a beneficiary. So just wanted to explain that further.
There's a lady in the far back.
Hi, Jennifer
Thank you. Thank you for being here and answering my questions. I think this is some questions and then possible follow-up with the answer. When the areas are logged, does the trust pay for the roads, or is that factored into the cost of projects?
Yes, actually, when we do put forward a timber sale, road construction and infrastructure development is usually a part of that that contract. Not usually, it is always a part of that contract.
So the state, forest, and other entities do not pay for the roads to go into those projects?
Not on trust land.
Okay. And the other thing is that the projected income I have read for the two projects in Petersburg and Ketchikan, is the projected income is $5 million. Is that correct?
Yes, up to $5 million.
Okay. And the other question I have is, when this is reconsidered and goes from a project to a best interest decision, are those EISs or hydrology studies going to be available to the public?
This is a state project. We do not have EISs.
Okay. Are any of those considerations, like hydrology studies and landslide, projected landslides, going to be made available to the public?
Well,
I think under
the Forest Practices Act, which is how we conduct our operations, we have best management practices that are in place that protects fish habitat and primarily water quality. You know, we also have strict road guidelines under the best management practice of the Forest Practices Act. These two Pacific timber sales have no road construction anticipated due to that they're going to be helicopter selective harvest.
But I did read somewhere that you said that the deer might have to be cut in more traditional manners, and from my point of view, that would be clear cutting, correct?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
There was a statement in one of the papers that I read that you had said that it might have to be logged in a more traditional manner than helicopter logging.
Well, as I stated earlier, we still have not done a detailed plan of operations for that operation. So, you know, but at this time, I've been instructed, especially on Deer Mountain, that it would be a helicopter sale.
Okay. And then as far as fiscal responsibility, I'm sorry to hog this here. Okay. Fiscal responsibility, and I'm sure you're aware of the OSO decision lawsuit down in Washington, where the logging company was fined $10 million and the state $50 million regarding that landslide. And I think that in any future projection, that should be taken into consideration too, as far as making money. You're going to lose money on lawsuits.
Risk assessment is always part of our considerations.
So another question. Is there something?
I can address your designated beneficiaries. I've done considerable work this year with the Ketchikan Wellness Coalition. We did a community assessment on behavioral health and especially mental health and prevention. And we have data that shows that when the economy declines, the behavioral health issues such as suicide, domestic violence, and substance abuse increase dramatically. So if you log your mountain and we lose tourist businesses, the economy in Ketchikan is going to decline. Tourism is the number one driver of the economy in Ketchikan. And commercial fishing is a distant second. Timber is virtually not in the race. So the economy would decline. I think we all agree that. We can probably quantify by almost how much the economy would decline if we destroy the visual aspect that draws the tourists. But I can give you the statistics of the direct beneficiaries that you're supposed to benefit, whose behavioral problems will increase when the economy declines. And we have that in an assessment document. And that comes from the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, which is a nationwide survey of behavioral health issues. So we've got the data for your beneficiaries.
Thank you for that comment. It appeared to me from something you said that I think I should clarify, that on a selective harvest done by helicopter, which is when we consulted with the trust, the board of trustees, the consultation said that primarily it would be helicopter harvest. And as an example, this summer we did a helicopter harvest over at Cat Island in Hollis, or near Hollis. And in that, the trust was able to get over $600,000 in revenue. And when you look at it, you can fly over, you can take a picture of it, you can see it. There's almost no visual impact of getting that much money out of it by harvesting. Signal Mountain, Minerva Mountain, Gravina,
all have had selective harvests right in Ketchikan, and there's very little in the way of visual impact. The borough, on the borough website, just did a set of selective harvests over at Blank Inlet, is it? And you can go and you can actually look at the videos that they've put out there. They've had the little a remote controlled video.
Drone.
There you go. The drone that took up, and they took videos of it. And you can see very little visual impact. When you selective harvest, you're plucking trees. That's what you're doing, you're taking trees out. And when you make a statement that the economy will be harmed by a selective harvest, I'm not sure that we completely agree with that in the sense that we believe a selective harvest can be done, and we haven't designed this one yet, granted, but in general, selective harvest can be done with very little visual impact. And therefore, in places where we've done selective harvest and where others have done selective harvest, whether it's Sea Alaska or others, we see that tourism can still occur. Other things can occur, people go through, and the general tourist, when they look at it, they can't tell that it's been cut. But that's what we've seen with selective harvest. So I just want to clarify, there's a substantial difference between selective harvest and clear cut. But thank you for your comment. So, sir, the right over. Oh, you got somebody else? Okay.
I believe you made an announcement that you could harvest as much as 10 million board feet off of Deer Mountain. Is that an accurate statement?
Excuse me. You know, I'm sorry, I don't have my crews with me. We did an extensive timber cruise on Deer Mountain as part of the 2003 legislative sale. You know, so I went through and took basically the numbers that we generated from some of our other helicopter sales and put that percentage towards that. And so, you know, I figured somewhere around 40% of the spruce, significant amount of the red cedar, and 20% of the hemlock. And 28 million. Yes, probably could be close to 10 million.
Yeah. As a forester, can you tell us approximately how many board feet are in an existing stand of timber on average?
That really depends on the stand. I mean, for a long time, the Forest Service used for overgrowth production of about 25,000 board feet the acre. That's been found a little bit high, so I think on the Tongass average is somewhere around 22 average, but actually Deer Mountain is a very nice stand of timber, so it's above that.
And so if it's about that, and there's 889 acres, that means there's roughly 20 million total board feet of standing timber there. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to take 10 million, that's 50% of the trees.
That's about 26, if I remember correctly. I don't have the crews with me, so I'm estimating, but it's a fairly significant portion. It's above 25, 26 million.
Total. And you're going to take 10 million out of it, so 40%.
Again, let me stress that we had not designed or going forward this timber sale at this time. We will come back and do this again if we move forward with it. But yes, we're looking at about 40% of the volume. So
I don't understand how you can assert that taking 40% of the volume off of that hillside is not hardly going to impact the view shed.
Just talking about what has happened in the past and assume that I can put that towards the future. Because you're harvesting some of the larger, more heavily volume trees. Yes, you go through and take the good thing, good wood.
Yeah, my name is Rob Reek, and I just had a question. You mentioned the 62-step process in land exchange, and a couple of those steps you mentioned were NEPA, and I'm not sure where you guys are in that 62-step process, but I haven't seen any mention of any NEPA yet, so that was one question on this project. I noticed on your maps that there's a lot of state land adjacent to some of these lands. Have you interacted with the state to see about trading, exchanging some of their lands with you? That way you can cut out some of the federal bureaucracy and interaction, and maybe you can have a quicker exchange of some of the forestry state lands. And my third question is, I noticed these maps haven't changed much in 10 years, so let's see how many comments are really informed in your decision-making process here. So it looks, it's the same. It sounds like comments are provided have fallen on deaf ears. So.
Well, that was kind of my point. I've been going around for 4 years showing people these maps and explaining to them about this administrative land exchange process. We signed the agreement to initiate a administrative land exchange in June of 2015. And we were working with the Forest Service trying to move forward in the NEPA process. We spent almost a year trying to come up with a memorandum of understanding to move into that process. And I apologize, I left that off in my earlier presentations, I usually say. But towards the end of that, this spring, we were presented with a estimate that the NEPA process would cost a minimum of $3 million, and that's if there was no litigation. It would take 3 to 5 years, plus it would take another 2 years, 2 to 3 years to go through the survey, land transfer conveyance processes, which require surveys, timber cruises, appraisals. This is a value for value exchange. It's not an acre for acre exchange. And at that time, then the senator introduced legislation. If we go through this legislation process, we can potentially sew this up rather quickly and move forward in a couple of years. We will have an abbreviated NEPA process, which will require several other steps, but we won't be going through the full NEPA process. And that is one of the reasons why we moved away. We haven't totally discarded the administrative process, but it is apparent that the existing industry is not going to be around that long. And so, you know, we're trying to move this forward, have been for a long time. As I said, I've gone and passed out 400 of those pamphlets for the administrative process. This legislation is identical, or very close as we could make it. The reason it's adjacent to state land is that is one of the criteria that was required for the selection of those federal lands, that they adjoin current state lands and that they allow for easier administration. And state process, we have not found a lot of interest in the state wanting to exchange lands.
Well, adjacent to federal lands, not adjacent to state lands, right?
No, adjacent to state lands. Yes.
We have another question back here.
I have a question about, did you do any studies how this is going to impact the goats on the mountain, the bears, the deer, the eagles? And we have a very unique bat that is in our region. Has there been any studies about what this forestry, if these trees are taken down on Deer Mountain? Has there been any studies at all?
At this point, we have not entered into a decision process. We haven't formulated any studies to study wildlife or anything like that at this point. So we haven't moved forward with the sale at all at this point or the decision process. There's a gentleman back there. Great.
My name is Mike Selle. I was born in Ketchikan. I lived on Gravina since I was 9, and when Mental Health first did its timber sale over there, I did quite a bit of walking around in places that I had deer hunted for many years on Gravina. Got my second and numerous subsequent deer, probably one of the two largest deer I've ever taken on Gravina. So I hiked around that place quite a bit, and I was pretty interested in what was going on, and they started helicopter logging that place. And I just recently finished a hike over in Blank Inlet, and I see that nothing has really changed. They have done the same thing. I've hiked on Gravina, I've hiked on behind Rosa Bay, I've hiked behind the airport, I've hiked up behind Wolf Point, I've hiked up in the Bear Valley, and up in the Shonbar Valley, where those places have been helicopter logged. And when you say, and you can seem to be concerned about the visual impact, you are not speaking at all, or haven't seen anything about the impact that's on the ground. There are down trees, there are down logs. When I hiked the trail up to Minerva Mountain, came down that in the dark, and to my chagrin, there was trees felled across the trail that used to come down from that mountain. It is a travesty what is done. It's like it's a bankruptcy liquidation sale when you do this helicopter logging. And I'm speaking to some of the loggers that are right here in this room who are going to be doing logging. It's an embarrassment. I'm embarrassed for the people that do that logging because they have left so much waste. In Blank Inlet, I saw 41-foot logs that were sound on one end and they had a little bit of conk on the other end. The whole log was culled out. There were cedars cut down. They took a 12-foot section out of it, left the rest of the tree. I don't know what the State Forest Practices Act says about how much wood has to be taken out of the woods. The Forest Service has an 8-inch minimum top and something like a third of the log. If a third of the log is good, it has to come out of the woods. Not so with the timber sales that are going on mental health lands or other private lands. And the helicopters, they are apparently so expensive that they can't take a lot of the wood out, so they just leave it there. They cut it down and it's left. And it makes a mess for somebody that wants to walk through it. You've got these lovely little drone videos looking down from above. You don't see the cut-off ends of all of the tops that have been left. All you see is a few stumps, and that's only on the better quality ones. On the YouTube one, you can barely even see those. So, I guess my question is, since I don't see anything changing much in your logging practices, does anybody on the mental health board have any inclination or any understanding of climate change and the role that standing forests take in mitigating climate change? You're going along in the 1950s mentality as though we need to cut it all down and let it grow back and become a productive forest. Well, I'm sorry, but that doesn't work anymore. We've got climate change upon us, and I'm wondering what you guys think about climate change. Is it like Don Young said a while back, that it's simply a hoax? Is that what you guys, the paradigm that you're operating on?
I would say, to answer your question about whether the board has any experience or any expertise in the area of climate change, I would say likely not. The Trust Land Office, remind everyone, the Trust Land Office is our contractor. They manage these lands. They harvest this timber. So I would have to ask Paul or Quinn how they'd answer that question about climate change.
So, in answer to the climate change, I would say that I'm aware of many aspects that people are saying that is climate change. I mean, there's evidence of erosion in Alaska is caused by changing climate, things like that. So, I don't think there's an argument that there's not a climate change. I think the pertinent question is, do we take climate change as one of our criteria in deciding whether we should harvest timber? And the answer is no. It is not one of the things that we use to make a decision whether to harvest timber.
Now, I think the aspect that we will consider is, what do we think the rotation of the timber is? How long does it take to come back? What do we think the next harvest would be? And some of that in deciding how much we should harvest in any one area or something like that. So I think we have considerations of long-term growth patterns that might be affected by climate change, but it's not climate change within itself that drives the decision. So anyway, with that, is there any others? Okay, and just for clarification, we are coming up almost 15 minutes till. We'll take a few more questions. We wanted to leave a little bit of time that we can talk with individuals afterwards, because what we found is people do want to have some discussions, and we want to be available for that. So just to honor that, because we announced that, I'm going to go ahead and take a few more
questions. Thanks. Brian Brown, Alcan Forest Products. I'll make a quick comment on climate change, just off the record. The state of Washington, they're going to harvest about 4 billion board feet of timber this year. So the 8 or 10 million feet that Mental Health is going to harvest, I doubt will have much of a impact on that amount. But we've been working with our buying timber from Mental Health since 2002. I went up this steep ledge. I was, bought some timber from Sciatica Corp up there in Sitka and said, hey, you guys got some land next door? We'll do that. He said, Sitka, are you serious? And I said, yeah, well, it'll be good. And we went up there and logged out in 2002. And we went to a meeting like this, and the tourism was going to end, and everything was, people were going to go crazy, and the same stuff I'm hearing today. And we got all done and left, and we never heard another word about it. It was, and again, you can, like these guys were saying, you can fly over and look at it and see. We've logged, firstly, everything you can see here in Ketchikan, we've logged with helicopters. Bear Valley, what's the problem with that? Remember, Bob? I promised you there wouldn't be any visual impact on that. That was good. To my word on that. You got to admit. It'd be the same thing here. We logged over to Gravina. I'll agree with Slee that it's not as easy to walk around out there in the woods when we're done logging, because a lot of stuff gets left. But that's a trade-off. You can have a clear cut, it's going to be a big, ugly eyesore, take everything out, or you're going to go in there and do a value harvest. It's two different ways to do it. We're a big supporter of the trust getting their land exchange. I think it's important that they get it. But what these guys said is right. The timber industry, Viking us, maybe not Sea Alaska so much, but we're not going to hang around here forever when nobody's selling any timber. So if these guys are going to do something, and they have I haven't heard anybody here suggest that other than the lady over here, how are they going to get revenue off of these lands? And frankly, I don't think anybody's going to put up a toll booth on the Deer Mountain Trail anyway. But, they got to raise revenue. And unfortunately, in Southeast Alaska, the only way to raise revenue off of land pretty much is with timber harvest. So I don't really have a question.
All right, thank you. I've been listening. There's a lot of misinformation going around from people that don't understand a lot about the forest. That I heard that Paul do a pretty good job talking about volume on the Deer Mountain, but realistically, most of the timberland, these old world timber forests, have got like 200 or 300 trees per acre, and the partial cuts I've seen, they take maybe 10 or 15 trees per acre on that. They're just taking a few trees. They're not taking the very biggest trees generally, because those have a lot of rot. They're really old and they're getting ready to die anyway. So they take, they take the larger, more valuable, but not the biggest trees. And really, you look around, other than a few spots here and there, it's hard to see where they've actually been logging in these areas. And I've walked a bunch of these partial cuts around Ketchikan as well. And yeah, there's a few places where there's some tops on the ground, but there's not a bunch of valuable wood. If you see a conch on a log, it's pretty much useless. It's not good for anything. There was a question about wildlife. Some lady asked about wildlife. Generally, the wildlife increases after people harvest. There's a big increase in wildlife. That's why there's so many deer on Prince of Wales, and that's why people go out there to hunt. There's more songbirds, there's more small mammals in the clear cuts. There's a lot of what people think about logging is just hype that they've heard from people that are opposed to it. There's climate change is that I hardly want to talk about climate change. I mean, we're talking about, I think that everything that Mental Health Trust had, if they loaned every square acre, it'd be, I think maybe one millionth of 1% of the Earth's climate. It wouldn't have anything to do with climate change, and the trees grow back. So then Bob wants to talk.
I think one more question, right?
Yeah, I'm looking around this room and I see probably every one of you have lived here for a long time, decades, if not more. And I would anticipate that most of us here, if not all of us, plan on spending a lot more time here in Ketchikan. I can appreciate the concern about Deer Mountain and its value to this community, and I appreciate all the comments that have been put forth. I guess in my mind, the elephant in the room is this. Mention was made that the combination of the timber sales between Ketchikan and Petersburg would yield about $5 million revenue for the trust. Has anybody in our governing bodies here in Ketchikan been approached by Mental Health Trust and made the offer of purchasing the timber rights to Deer Mountain? We could put this thing to bed. I mean, we could form a citizens' initiative with this group here in this room tonight and go before our governing bodies and say, we want to buy that timber that is on Deer Mountain, and we can own it, and we can just do away with this controversy about logging and losing this viewshed here in Ketchikan. So we've got governing bodies here tonight listening. And, you know, goodness, this community has spent far more than $5 million on a lot of other stuff. And $5 million is, I don't know if that's an accurate figure or not. But, you know, we could buy this timber on Deer Mountain, and it could be ours in perpetuity. So, governing bodies, citizens of Ketchikan, if this really means that much to you, let's get with it. Let's make an offer to buy this instead of putting it up for sale and getting it harvested. That's not what we want to see. So that's my key.
Okay, thank you for your comment. Just in response, if you could ask a question in there, that we have informed the borough of the fact that, yeah, we're open to the idea of a sale. And the thing is that the trust, anybody can approach the trust at any point in time and say, we would like to purchase land. We do sell land on a negotiated basis. We do sell land through a competitive basis. And when we're going through our best interest decision, if we do the land exchange, you wouldn't have to expend local resource money for it because we wouldn't be doing anything with Deer Mountain. But in the event that land exchange did fail, if you were to go through the decision process, if we would move forward with that, we consider alternatives. One alternative is a purchase. I mean, if somebody comes forward and says, yes, we'd like to purchase it, and we have money to purchase it, and well, then we can consider that as an alternative. So I want to express that we really thank you for your questions. The reason I'm not trying to shut people down, anything like that, but we advertised that we would do questions and answers, then we'd also have some time extra here. So what I want to do is, one, I want to thank the supporters.
We're 20 minutes late, so I think there's more people other than me who would like to ask questions.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. I want to thank the
Wait, I think we could allow for just a couple more questions. I have gotten a lot of head nods around, so okay. There are several more. Since we have such a large group gathered, I think we could
go a little further. I was just trying to also allow time because of the fact that we're supposed to be ending at 9. So.
Let's go a couple more minutes.
So did you have
more questions? There's one right here.
Okay.
Yeah, Marvin Scott, born and raised in Ketchikan. I started doing some research this afternoon and came across a document made by Paul Flynn Kemp. It had a kind of a curious number in it, actually. According to Mr. Flynn Kemp, the net income off of the K3 timber sale is only $335,000. So I've heard this number, $5 million revenue, thrown around a little bit. It does actually look like your principal is 1.7, but your net income is only $335,000. Mr. Slemkamp, is that true?
That would be me. Okay. I think we spent some time discussing the corpus of the trust. The corpus of the trust is the entire account. When we dispose of an asset, timber is an asset, they disperse that income to income and principal. When we do a real estate transaction which would deplete the trust, the corpus, that entire amount, 100%, goes into principal. When we do mineral extraction, 100% of that revenue goes into principal. When we have a real estate contract, the income off of that, or the interest, goes into our, what we call income, and the payments that go into the principal go into the principal. When we have a timber sale, 85% of the revenue from that timber sale goes into principal, and 15% of it goes into income. Income is used for an annual thing for beneficiary programs and costs.
So the $335,000 goes into mental health trust income towards beneficiaries. My real question for you here today is, even at the amount of, let's say, a little over $2 million, say that's completely benefiting the Alaska Mental Health Trust, my concern is the potential of landslides, not only in Ketchikan, but of course Petersburg as well. When we look at this Oso Washington settlement of $10 million just paid towards 43 people, for the 43 people to die when that landslide occurred, are you really being responsible towards your beneficiaries if the possible liability for this is $10 million as compared to a small $2 million?
As I said earlier, we do a risk analysis whenever we do an action. I believe I put in $2,100,000.
Okay. Is the land for sale, and if so, how much?
We haven't done an appraisal. 10 years, anyway.
10 years.
Yeah. At this point in time, if we were starting to go down a land sale thing, that we would have to look at the value, compare it to the timber value, and it doesn't mean that we would necessarily sell it just for the appraised value. It might be for more than appraised value because the timber value might be that much more. So that's where it's a negotiation. That's where we can't.
There's never been that negotiation.
Right, that's right. Yeah. So.
My name is Joe Williams. Born here in Ketchikan, raised in Saxon, and spent all my life here with exceptions at the time I went away to school. Thank you very much for coming to our small community of Saxon. A great deal more of information was received here this evening by me attending. I was kind of surprised about the helicopter cutting. As you know, my comment in Saxon was about our water. The water in Saxon, the water anywhere in the U.S. city is very precious. But our water in Saxon is very precious to the 420 people that reside there year-round. I'm sorry that we didn't offer you a glass of water that came out of our reservoir. But I got some assurances this evening, earlier, before this meeting, that our water would be affected, but I'm really taken back. And I'm struggling with the my struggle is this evening, gentlemen, and that is, it seems to me what's happening here, decisions are already been made. You're going to do what you want to do as best for it, and you're going to label it, this is best for our constituency. And this hearing should have happened 2 years ago. I struggle with the fact that this young man saying I've been out in the field for 4 years talking about the timberland sale. And yet I don't ever remember this young man attending our Village of Saxon City Council meeting, which is held monthly. I don't remember reading it on the agenda for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. So I do have some struggles, and they're internal. Now I've made them external. Now it becomes part of yours. The folks in North Dakota are struggling with the same issue about water. And I want, as I stated earlier this evening, I want to make it very, very clear. My father gave his life to our small community of Saxton. He was mayor for 38 years, and I followed with 12 years. But when we worked on our water, it was long before any water regulations were in, just a matter of getting the water to the house. I'm 72 years of age, and I remember working on that when I was 8 and 9 years of age. And so, water is very important to our small community of Saxon. You can live without water for 7 days. I don't want that to happen to our community of Saxon. And I'm asking again publicly, you sent me a layover of the land that was selected by Mental Health Trust, and how much of that was given to Saxon back in 1889. So that's my request to you. Carlton, I'll hold you to that. And one of the first things I would like to see is that overlay. And I promise, I really get this feeling, gentlemen, please understand. I really get this feeling, and the feeling is this. You've made your decision, and what's happening here tonight? It's because somebody said you forgot to do it. Oh, you're going to do it. So, I hope that the process changes in the future, Carlton. This happens first, and then the rest will follow. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Joe. We failed to recognize you when you came in, and we know that you've had a great role here in Saxman, also in Ketchikan. We're glad you're here tonight. Thank you.
Okay, there are 4 people I see that have questions that have been flagging me down. So I think we'll take those 4 that I know, and then we will end the formal Q&A process, but staff will still remain available to have individual questions answered. So we'll start right here. Thank you. At this chance of sounding like I don't know what I know, I'm trying to understand. What I'm hearing is that we are not to a selling point about timber on your mountain. It's about an exchange. A land exchange that is in question to be done, that's what I don't quite understand. It's like, if the land exchange goes through, then we won't have to worry about selling. What is the land exchange, and how is that going to affect us? Who gets that land if we exchange it? Do they get the rights to Deer Mountain? I don't understand that part. Because if I once understand that, and that doesn't go through, then we would be talking about sale, and then you would do studies and do whatever it requires. At that point, maybe we could purchase. But I want to know what this exchange not going through or going through means.
Thank you. The exchange is being worked to try to exchange land with the Forest Service, the U.S. Forest Service. And the lands that are shown on the maps right behind Carly there, that are yellow. Those would be going to the Forest Service, and that includes both the mineral estate, the subsurface, and the surface estate, and that would go wholly to the Forest Service to manage as part of the National Forest. And as far as their plans show, they have no intention, according to their Tongass plan, of logging that. So they're going to manage it for recreation. Now, I can't speak for the Forest Service that it will remain that way forever, but I can say by the current Tongass plan, it appears that it's going to be managed for recreation. The orange areas are the areas that we would get from the Forest Service as fee simple, which means that we can get all the rights to it, and then we can manage it. That would be out of Shelter Cove, Nocatee, and Hollis. And so basically what it does is it shifts the trust ownership from next to the communities to away from the communities, and then we can continue to try to make revenues off of those lands. Does that help?
Well, it says, where's Deer Mountain?
So Deer Mountain is on the yellow and in Ketchikan, and it's K3 over there, and it is next to Ketchikan. Right now we own that wholly. That would go to the Forest Service. All those yellow parcels next to Ketchikan would all go to the Forest Service for the Forest Service to manage. We would have no more ownership interest in those lands.
There's no knowledge of what the Forest Service would do. Nobody knows
what they... your point is you don't know what the Forest Service is going to do. They've just gone through the Tongass Plan Amendment, and they, in the Tongass Plan Amendment, explain what they're going to do with the different lands they have, well, in the Tongass Plan and in the amendment. And from what, Paul, am I incorrect in stating what it states? But I'll leave it.
Yeah. Basically, the Forest Service lands are taking the adjacent land use designations. That particular land use designation, I'm pretty sure, is scenic viewshed. And this just really highlights what this is about. It shows that these lands should probably be in the public hands, to where when an activity happened on those lands, you would go through an EIS. You would have the public comments. You would have all this.
Have an opportunity at that time to address it.
Yeah.
If the
odds are that the Forest Service owned that, and I mean, they're doing very low activity as far as actual forest management on their lands as it is. So. Probably nothing, but it would take on the land use designation of the adjacent lands.
Good evening. My name is John. I'm a lifelong resident. I appreciate the last time coming forward and meeting with the communities that are involved in this selected area that they want to walk. To me, Deer Mountain is my old stomping grounds. From the time I was in fifth grade up until after I graduated from high school, the military. I go up there once or twice during the summer months on nice sunshine days. And even to this day, the tourists that come to this community every summer from May through September, they see that beautiful hillside and a beautiful green timber. And it would be a travesty if that were to be like I heard Mr. Stenkamp say at this point in time, you guys have no plan for logging for the future. But hypothetically speaking, I would be concerned because of the shallow ground that those trees grow on, the landslide that could occur, the housing that below this mountainside, whether it be Saxman Forest Park or the people that live at the base of that hill up on the Ketchikan Lakes Road. After everybody's questions are answered and comments are made, I would like to sit down with one of you, maybe Paul, and point out which side of the mountain are you going to log. Is it the face, the backside? Is it the downhill side where Ketchikan Lake is, back in there where there's big, beautiful standing, not only Western Hammock, but beautiful Sitka spruce? So, and if anything, and there's no guarantee that there isn't going to be logged, but I would recommend that the city of Ketchikan or the Ketchikan Gateway Borough look at buying that so it'll never, ever be touched for years to come. Thank you.
Thank Good evening. My name is Sylvia Binney. I also represent the Organized Villages Saxon, which is the IRA Council, which is the sovereign government. And I'm also on the City Council of the City of Saxon. So I wear many hats within my community. I was born and raised on this island. I lived all my life in Saxon. My house sits on bottom of Deermont. Or right out of Deermont, but Deer Mountain, excuse me. He was just talking about Deermont. And I have relatives that live up on the higher parts of the mountains. Joe Williams was stating how our watershed comes from off of the back of that mountain and comes down. Water is life. If we don't have water, we don't have life. So how can Mental Trust say that they're taking care of their people if they're going to destroy our water? Because I know my brother was a logger. I had a brother-in-law that was a logger. And I've been out to a lot of logging camps visiting them, and I've seen what's left over from logging. Whether you clear cut, there's still all kinds of junk left there. If you select cut, there's still lots of junk there. It's just one of those things. I want to know how much the cost is to survey all this property. I'd like to know, as far as, have you even thought about the possible landslides, as what Norman Areola spoke of early, where the landslides can come down there, because it's not a lot of dirt there. We have a lot of water coming down here every year. Have you taken that into consideration? And I'd also like to ask, what about the helicopter noise? If you're going to helicopter log the mountain in there, what about all the people that live around there and all that noise? Because I know I can hear it. Because I hear helicopters go across from, correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but isn't there somewhere out there just on the edge of Saxon where the helicopters keep going back and forth across the seaport? I don't know if you have seen them, but I have. And they're loud even that far away from me. Because I'm right at the very beginning of Saxon, as you go south. My house has been there. My father's lived there. My grandparents have lived in Saxon. My aunts and uncles. That's our heritage. And when you start messing with our water, you're messing with our lives. And how does that fit into your thing about your people that you serve? Thank you.
Thank you. The comments you're making on the water, we heard earlier when we were down at Saxon. We obviously will consider water. Issue of, as Paul mentioned, we haven't designed the sale, where we cut, how we actually designed that. So that's too common if we were to go down the sale path. The helicopter noise, there's no denying that when you do a helicopter harvest, there's lots of noise. And there is for a duration. And I would have to say that is the trade-off of doing a helicopter harvest, is that versus people going in and building roads and all that, there's benefits of different types of sales. And helicopter harvest does cause I'll call it a temporary noise for a period of time. And you're absolutely correct, it does have it. And I can't say that it won't be noisy if we did that. So was that the four that you had said, or was there another?
Oh, goodness. There's a couple more. What time do we have?
Well, we're supposed to be done at 9, is what they told us.
It's a public meeting. Let people stay.
So,
I'm not sure we, there's staff here for the building. We told them that we would be done at 9. I don't know if you're good. Okay. Okay. Just wanted to double check so we're not imposing on them. So let's just, so I see one, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah,
my name is Jill Reek, and I can appreciate the goals of the trust, but I also have a question. If I understood you correctly, you say you basically circumvented the Forest Service NEPA process by this legislation for the land exchange. And my question is, when did the people get a chance to talk about the land exchange then? Because we've been, some of us have been looking really forward to having this Couch Camp to Shelter Cove Road go through, where we actually had a place away from town to be able to recreate, to go get firewood, to go hunt, just to get off further away from Ketchikan and have a place to drive. And it's my understanding from what I know of land exchanges, if this goes through, it's your property. We will have no access to any of that country that's shown in orange around Shelter Cove. And when do we get a chance to provide our input onto how that affects us?
So I'll cover a couple of things Paul can add into. So the aspect of if that land at Shelter Cove did come over to the trust through the land exchange, you're correct, then we manage that. We have to make decisions on what we're going to do. We have an administrative decision process where you actually get to comment when we make a decision, let's say, to do a timber cut. I'm trying to make sure I capture all of them, but you're also saying that I'm not sure.
Shelter Cove Road.
Yeah, Shelter Cove Road, that's right, because the road is already being constructed, and then you talked about NEPA, and I want to go back to NEPA too. Okay, so the road is being constructed by DOT right now, and it goes on through our existing land, goes through what we would be getting, and provides access to many other roads over there. And you're correct, there's a lot of people that recreate over there and do things. Can people actually use our land, trust land? People, as long as they're out on foot, they can. We don't allow motorized use without a permit. But people can go out and they can use the land, they can hike through it. We actually have a policy that allows that. So we're not denying general access in that sense. The NEPA process that you mentioned, if we were to go through the administrative land exchange process, we would have had a very lengthy NEPA process. If the land exchange legislation goes through as it's written, there would be four primary study areas, the cultural resources, the Endangered Species Act, and
Hazardous materials
and one other. But there's studies that oftentimes happen during the NEPA process that would still be done, because we still have to do those. But because Congress would actually direct the National Forest Service to do the action, there's no alternative. It just says, make it so. And therefore, NEPA is all about determining, is the other analysis better or the effects? So there's no alternative. What's the effect of it? There are no alternatives, because once Congress says do it, it's done. So that's why it's not us trying to circumvent NEPA, but that's what the result of legislation does. This is one of the reasons why it expedites it, and why we believe we can get timber on the market within a 2-year period. Did you want to add anything else?
No.
Okay.
Hello, my name's Tom Fowler. I grew up here. I did a lot of things in my life, one of which was work in the timber industry, which I'm quite proud of. And I find myself strangely that I can't think of hardly a single timber sale that I've opposed, if any, ever in this area. I support timber a lot, except this one. I find this, the idea of logging near a mountain, completely an antithesis of what you guys supposedly represent in mental health trust. I might mention I also started the Deer Mountain Race 25 years ago. We run up there on the 4th of July to the top of that. I'm pretty sure that would be ruined by this. It's completely crazy. And the question that I have is, you have presented yourself numerous times here tonight and other places as a private entity. But you are a strangely private entity in that you also accept funds and get part of the budget from the state of Alaska. And I've heard people talk in Petersburg, my friends there, people here in Ketchikan, that maybe the amount of money that you sell this for, that you talk about contacting our representatives and having that cut from your budget as a way to force you, as we are pawns in this particular instance, to try and leverage this swap, which I'm for, by the way. I totally think that we ought to put that swap through. But these are the sort of questions I find that my position as a pro-logging person hurt by your guys' position, and the sort of damage that you're doing to your reputation. Have you guys considered that? And have you considered what the talk I've heard of people trying to force you through their legislative, their people in Juneau, to cut your budget by these amounts, and in which case becomes a wash? And like I said, I do support the swap totally, and I spoke on pretty much all the logging too, but I find this crazy.
Thanks for your question. I'll actually field that one. The Mental Health Trust Authority and the Trust Land Office receive zero general fund dollars from the state. So all of our grants and our operating administrative budgets are from the revenue and the income that's generated from both the corpus of the trust. And we get no money from the state of Alaska. No.
Yeah, thank you. I have a comment and then a question. My comment has to do with twice, both in Saxman and here, you brought up Blank Inlet, implying that a light touch on Flatland there could be replicated in Deer Mountain. I spoke with a logger who was held in very high regard, who was not in this room, and I do want to say I hold Eric and Brian in high regard, but it's a different person, and talked about that. And what the logger told me is, when you take out 1 million board feet on 1,200 acres of Blank Inlet flat, and you do the math, he thought maybe 25,000 board feet per acre, it's about 3% of the timber that's taken out. Deer Mountain, 898 acres, steep slopes, and according to this logger, a lot of the trees will have high canopy. So very, very visible when you take out 40% of the timber on a slope. And I hope, especially since I know the borough had sent, apparently from what I saw in the paper, for informational purposes, hey, here's this drone. And later when a borough assembly member asked what the purpose was, I believe I read in the paper that a borough staff agreed that there was a substantial difference between logging and Blank Inlet and the visual impacts there to potential visual impacts of Deer Mountain. So I just want to set that to rest, and I urge you to do the same. My question gets to the upcoming Board of Trustees meeting, keeping in mind it's the same people who met last week. They did recommend that the board themselves agree or not, concur or not, the language is in there, with the recommendation to go ahead with timber harvest on Deer Mountain if federal legislation was not passed by January 15, 2017. As I mentioned to you in Saxman, I had made a public comment before that meeting that was ignored to have that option put on the table. We heard from several people here as something worth considering. Given, however, that the history of the Board of Trustees, I went through the minutes from September 14th to the present, and other than one board member objecting during the reconsideration of the timber sales at the Resource Management Committee meeting the other day, every single board action was concurring without objection with the recommendation that they made to themselves, since it's the same people. So, with that context, I am asking, if you receive substantial public comment that urges the proposers login, which I think you've heard here and have heard otherwise, and suggests that the option of a possible sale, and I'm not saying that to be endorsed, I'm not saying that to replace this is the timber harvest option, although if I could wave my magic wand, it would. But what is the likelihood that there would be good faith consideration by the Board of Trustees of adding that to the menu of options that the board might consider should federal legislation not pass by January 15th, 2017?
Well, thank you for your suggestion earlier. It was Saxman meeting, and again, looking at these other options, we simply did not have the time. The last time your options as were presented in that email, what we do is we ask our contractor, our experts, to look at these new options and give us their recommendations from a technical standpoint. And believe me, this entire process is complicated. And I would assume that now that we will have a public process, this process is different than the last consultation that we had. We now will call for public input. There will be plenty of opportunity to take the comments from tonight into consideration, but the trigger will be drawn on public process for the November 17th meeting. And Wynn, do you have anything to add to that in terms of your analysis of new options?
I can't speak to whether the board, what the board's action will be, because it's the board's action, not mine. One of the things that I've highly encouraged people to do is to participate in the board process. And one is actually writing either letters, or we have forms back there that you can fill in to get to the board and provide your comment. And one of those comments is, like you're saying, I would like to see a sale as an option, as an alternative to a timber sale. And I think the board has all the power to change a motion to do that. So that what I'm saying is they can, we had said, they can modify, rescind, or concur with their original decision. Now, what we put forward again in, sorry, I don't have the date, whenever we met in the office, was it? 17th. No, that's coming up, 17th. We just met with the board. Sorry?
The 26th.
26th, there you go. The 26th. When we did that, it was virtually a mirror image of what was done before, because they were reconsidering the motion before. But the difference, I think, what you have here is you've now had informational meetings, and by all means, I don't want to misconstrue this meeting as being an official public hearing or something like that. It's not. This is just an informational meeting. However, I strongly encourage you to either submit your comments in advance or get on the phone. And Carly told us it's the 16th at 4 is the probable time. We'll have a notice that goes out on that. Give your comments. The board will take it into consideration, the comments, when they move forward with their decision. And so, like I said, I can't attest to what they're going to do, but that is the way you get involved and you try to change their position.
I think that, I know this lady had raised her hand. I don't know who else.
There's just a couple of more, yeah. And we're just about a half hour overdue, yeah. So I want to be respectful of people's time, too. So, sorry.
Hi, good evening. My name is Rosie Ropel. I'm from I've lived here since 1952, and I'm from a timber family, which you all know. Frank Ropel is my brother. I love Deer Mountain. I have been pro-timber in a lot of different ways. But I live on Deer Mountain along with a whole bunch of other people because I love that place. I climb the mountain. I see the slides. I see the animals. I see all the recreation that's going on. I'm also a photographer. I take pictures of that mountain. I take a picture from the mountain every day and up the mountain. And I'm really concerned about the slides. I'm concerned about everything that everybody said. I'm a former educator. I've learned a lot at this meeting, and I would really hope that you would take all of our ideas and consider them because we are valuable people in this community. We have invested our lives here. Deer Mountain is an incredible part of all of our lives. It surrounds and is the backdrop of our community. And I just want you to know that we have helicopter sightseeing right now. And it rattles my cups in my windows and everywhere. Everything is just shaking. And it upsets me. My dog's barking. It is not a peaceful thing. I would like to know if plan A doesn't go through, I'd like to know, number one, how do we help get that legislation through for Murkowski and for all of us? And number two, how long does helicopter logging on that specific site go on? That's going to drive me nuts. I would just like to know that.
Valid questions. So on the first question, how can you help with the legislation? We have form letters back there that if you want to support legislation, you can put your name and address there. You can write your own letter to Senator Murkowski, Sullivan, Young, to encourage them to pass the legislation this year. And we've gotten a lot of comments already that have gone in. It helps to have more. So the more that you send in support and say that you want it, that's good. That's right now, that's one of the best things that the public can do, is just send in letters of support. There are other legislators from Washington and other places that are Democrats and stuff that we will be trying to reach to, also through various different means to make sure that they're on board. But I think primarily getting your Alaska delegation to hear that you're still very interested in the language change going forward. The second part of your question about how long, I'm going to turn over to Paul, because I just know in certain timber sales, like we just did Cat Island, was very short, but Paul, do you have any idea if we were to do it by helicopter, how long it might take?
You know, it'd be just a matter of several weeks, actually. Probably 3 to 4 weeks would be my just rough assumption. Is that about right?
You'd have a couple weeks,
but you're going to be flying to different areas, so it's not going to impact anyone there. Yeah, I live, like I said earlier, in a shoreline, and the area across from us, it was inconvenient. I mean, no doubt about it. It was noisy. I know that you didn't like it. It lasted, about 10 days, if I remember right. It was done. This isn't one of my favorite projects, by the way.
I'm on the board of directors of Southeast Conference and also a borough assembly member. And both bodies have passed resolutions strongly urging passage of the land exchange legislation. And I have also had conversations with my best friend from law school, who is now a United States Senator from Kansas. And you may have noticed that there are now three official sponsors of Senate Bill 3006. The two senators from Alaska, and Jerry Moran, senator from Kansas. So those of you who have contacts, use them. Speak to others about it. But I also have to let you know, to get his support, I had to assure him that we in Southeast Alaska would support his efforts to protect the lesser prairie chicken. I hope you all don't mind, but I assured him he would do that. So.
You know, I did notice that, and thank you very much. And it really is what we're trying to, make happen.
Hi, I'm Perry Reef. I used to work at Community Connections, and I worked with special needs children, and we take them up Deer Mountain because it's about the best place we can take kids to get some exercise and enjoy stepping out of their emotional environment. And we go up to the first mile lookout, look out to the ocean. We go up to the second. We try to aim for the third. This is an accomplishment for children in this community to have this wonderful outlet. When I want a birthday present, it's for my family to go up Deer Mountain. So we don't need presents. We just want to take these wonderful hikes. And so I ask all of you and your board and everyone, have any of you hiked up our Deer Mountain? Good, we've got one. How about you, sir? You got up there? Great, I just wanted to know. And I always was thinking, too, you know, if these options don't work out, could we all adopt a tree? And how much would a tree cost?
GoFundMe.
Well, GoFundMe.
GoFundMe.
Yeah, too. Thank you for coming, though.
Thank you.